It's time to tailgate.
No,
it's
a tailgate.
Taking a look around the world of college sports.
This is the tailgate on the Steakhouse.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Y'all, we got big, massive news regarding the cocktail party down in Jacksonville, folks. And Steak will remind everybody, you heard Kirby. Every time he could, I'm ready to have this a home-and-home series. We are losing a massive day of recruiting.
Yeah,
it's all about recruiting.
100%. So the anti-Dan Mullen, right? Like, everything's about recruiting, even during the season. Matter of fact, in season, even more important than outside the season, because we can showcase our beautiful stadium and our ridiculous indoor practice facility and our weight room and everything else.
So at a neutral site, you are not allowed to bring recruits. You're not allowed to have them on the sidelines, nothing. It's just a day you can mark off. So Kirby's like, why wouldn't, like you said, I want them in Athens. And as of this morning, breaking news, sources saying they will allow recruits for both schools in Jacksonville beginning this year. So in October,
I'm curious how both those schools attack the day. You know, like, you know, what? How do you make it special? You know, that stadium obviously is a little bit more antiseptic, and it's not built, you know, it's not a Georgia stadium or a Florida stadium. So how do you make it special? We
right.
know because we've been behind the scenes of what they built in Athens in that ridiculous recruiting area where they take the parents and the kids and the families on game day.
Right.
Which is just this insane, not to mention the locker room, but separate from the locker room is where they recruit these kids, which is a facility on the back end of the end zone that's spectacular. I wonder what they're going to do in Jacksonville.
You know, so comments along the Twitter when I retweeted was, now Kirby can stop, you know, being about that. If I were them, I would still want you. You know, Athens is special, and God forbid I just say that as a Seminole, that Gainesville game day is also special. So why, you know, you're missing an opportunity to have those kids take a visit to your city. Athens is as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
I don't think you should let up. I don't know why.
My point is, what are you going to do? You're going to cancel the game in Jacksonville, go home and home, just because of recruiting? I mean, there is a tradition there, right?
Why can't you go home, Jacksonville?
Well, then
home.
You could. I'm sure they've talked about it. Then you only get the largest outdoor cocktail party only one out of every 3 years. So, listen, Georgia's got six games or seven, you know, games to recruit at home, so they'll be fine.
It's coming. Go Dawgs. A $70 million upgrade to Sanford Stadium has been approved. The biggest headline stake that jumps out is Premium Suites. They're going to dial it out. They're
going to move the press box to, like most press boxes now, getting moved towards kind of the end zone.
Yeah.
And then all these facilities figured out, why do the guys that, you know, the frumpiest looking, you know, writers and broadcasters and guys that look like us, why do they get 50-yard line seats? So those days are over for
it's
the most
true.
Part. It's also like, if you notice the NBA, like guys like Steve Holman, used to be courtside. Remember, we grew up?
Yeah.
Courtside here at wherever it is. That doesn't exist because guess what? Those courtside seats, you can make like $100,000 per seat.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see that. Also, listen, it's an older stadium. The causeways underneath are there's not a lot of space. You're going to try to extend that. You're going to add suites. You're going to move the press, folks. So $70 million. Listen, all it means is that when it comes to the Georgia football program, there is no amount of money that won't be thrown in the mix to continue to keep the train rolling, right?
Yeah, and that's wonderful.
There's so much revenue coming in. And when you win a national title, I don't think fundraising is an issue.
That was interesting that Pioli was in Athens yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
That was really
And when
good.
I asked him the difference between the Alabama practice and the Georgia one, my gut instinct was that he wanted to say that he's never seen a practice like Georgia's, but the last thing he needs to get out there. And he didn't tell me this off the air. I kind of feel like he said, I've never seen a better practice than Kirby's. So when I asked him to compare it to Alabama, he said, I'm not gonna do that.
So he consults for both schools, which I didn't realize. I just asked his producer. I was like, what? I didn't know he was doing that. That's so interesting over there.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means exactly, but it means he's close to both those guys.
Yeah. I also want to mention, y'all, this you Wake Forest ACC fans, and you know who quarterback Sam Hartman is. He is out indefinitely with a non-football-related medical condition. Left practice yesterday, y'all. Very cryptic. So I hope that he and he's going to be okay. Thoughts and prayers with him. He, three-year starter. They won the Atlantic last year. High hopes for Wake Forest, so this is devastating news for them.
Yeah.
So, a little bit of college football for you.
They've done a great job with that program.
They really have.
All right, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. You're very welcome.
So eventually we're going to build like an ending to this, right? It's going to be like really exciting.
It just kind
of
ends.
The two of us just like, oh, okay.
That was
wonderful. Thank you. Let's talk about the Braves last night. What a great watch that was. As, you know, you got the kind of the coolness of Fenway Park, you know, where the Red Sox have kind of collapsed over the last month or so. It doesn't matter. It's still a sexy environment with the Braves and the Red Sox. I told you yesterday, there's no question in my mind that, yes, maybe it's 1 week late for some of the school systems to bring your kids up there, but there are still going to be a ton of Atlanta folks up there. Some of the schools don't go back until next week. A lot of the private schools in Atlanta, probably the folks that can afford the trip up there. But there was a lot of Atlanta fans that I heard in extra
innings.
I
agree with you.
I'm surprised they didn't talk about how loud it got when the Braves make their run, score two in the 11th, and get the W. And Austin Riley has a monster night, to say the least. Five RBIs, 30th home run. He talked, though, about the slide by Acuna on his hit in the 11th and what it's like having Ronald on the base paths.
To have Ronald score from second right there, that was huge. And you know, he needed it, and that slide was unbelievable. Anytime, you know, he's on the bases, you know, he puts a threat, you know, to teams, and that was impressive.
He is winning the internet this morning, Steak. This is all over the place. Ronald Acuna Jr. found an amazing way to avoid a tag at home.
Yeah.
It's on USA Today, and folks are losing their
mind. Well, I mean, there's like an energy with Ronald. I mean, he's having a monster road trip. He's hitting close to 500 on the road trip.
Well, he got his groove back. 3-for-5 last night, and that slide, he looks different. Doesn't he just look different?
Yeah, he's playing with more energy.
There you go.
All that stuff about him pouting, which was never really happening. He didn't feel healthy. He may not feel healthy later on, but he certainly looks like it on the road trip. And that athleticism, the speed, and you start talking about Michael Harris and Ronald Acuna and the way we run the bases, I mean, just in general, I mean, athletic guys. So Snit last night also talking about what was he talking
nice,
about?
Well, when you're struggling, it's awfully nice to get a win.
You know, when you're struggling and you're kind of looking for a win, it's never easy. It's not going to be just a, you know, something that's going to be smooth. But they kept battling tonight, kept coming back, and you know, it's a good ball game to win.
They scored five of the seven runs with two outs. Braves were just
They were clutch. Dansby had the big hit, and then we gave it back.
Yeah,
Dylan Lee did, and then it looks like we were in great shape. And then you go to the 11th, and you realize Tyler Matzek had to shut it down because you didn't want to go back and forth again. And Tyler Matzek had probably his best outing of the year. He also got his first major league save. So it certainly was good to get on the W side because Mets continue to win. They're 14-4. I think 14-4 since the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing with an extreme amount of confidence. And the Braves and Mets series, I mean, that man. Get ready for the battery. It's not going to look like necessarily October last year, but it ain't going to be far away, man, when the Mets are coming in next week, right?
There's going to be four sellouts next week.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now what's going to happen. And it is going to look like the playoffs, and it's going to be an energy that they're going to have to match what New York did. Because when the New York papers say, because they don't say nice things about anybody up there, and they're like, that was as loud as we have ever heard. The stadium. I'll give you the bad news. Orlando Arcia heard a pop in his hamstring. That's never good. So we'll wait to see who's called up and what's going to happen there. Also, Darnold is still not, he says he's feeling a little bit better, so they're going to look to the weekend for those four in Miami to possibly get him back then. Tonight you got Kyle Wright, Nick Pivetta. That's a 7-10 start. When you play the Marlins, also you're going to miss Sandy Alcantara. For the Marlins, he is pitching tonight. So that's a little bit of silver lining, too. So there you go.
Good stuff on the Braves. And, again, great coverage of not only the Braves but our Atlanta Falcons as we are live at training camp. Mike Vickel joined us at about 10:40 or so. A lot to talk to him about. I can tell you now what I've been thinking about. I've talked to Mike numerous times. Haven't talked much about leading into that Sugar Bowl. How big the hype was. That's the night that the rest of America figured out how big a deal he was.
Against my Seminoles.
The consensus number one, right.
Yes.
I mean, Florida State was a huge favorite in that game. What does he take away from playing Florida State? I want to look at that Florida State roster because they hung around that Sugar Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll share with him what happened when I was on the air and we found out Dan Reeves had traded for the number one pick and traded up in the draft with San Diego. They end up with LaDainian Thomas, so they did fine. And we end up with Mike Vick. So we'll chat with him about that and what he's up to and how well he is doing in the broadcast end of things as well. So it's interesting when you talk to Scott Pioli, who is the former general manager and director of player personnel and ran the Chiefs and all these different teams he's with, that these guys, to a man, and Mike Vick will talk about it as well, how do you replace the competition and how do you replace the locker room? Or in his case, Pioli, in Mike's case, it's the locker room,
right,
the building. Like, you know, you can do all the pre- and post-games in the world. You can, you know, have the ratings of, you know, and the money that Tony Romo's making and those guys. But nothing matches for an athlete or for a testosterone-driven, competitive guy, what that's like. And even when we ask Scott about it, he's like, you know,
it could seem light up. He does miss it.
Yeah. Like, he missed it.
Yeah.
Like living and dying with every pick and living and dying with every game,
yeah,
you know. I'm always fascinated, and I've had a chance to sit next to Thomas Dimitroff and Scott Pioli, and I've sat in Arthur back in the day, was able to sit in his suite a couple of times with Arthur Blank. And I'm always thinking, like, what the hell are these guys going through?
Right.
Like what are every game? It's only 16
Stake,
games.
How did it take such a quick, awful turn here?
Well, you hung on to Dan Quinn too long. You made, you know, listen, Thomas's record, he had phenomenal years of drafting the right guys. But when it went south, it really
went south. Quickly.
And you gave guys, I mean, the final Vic Beasley contract, listen to Pioli talk about they're going to watch Beasley and they end up watching Grady Jarrett. But the decisions you made that crushed you financially, right, and holding on, you got to have the New England mindset or the Steeler mindset or get rid of a guy a year early.
Yeah, you're slotted for this much money. If it's like, not good for you,
yeah,
there's
the worst
the
thing, worst, you got to get rid of a guy 1 year early, but
yeah,
never hold him a year longer or 2 years longer, because then you are crippled. And that's
and
why
how
it
they
turned.
Did it with do you remember, with Vic Beasley? Oh, it's like Dan Quinn took this as a personal project. Sign your fifth-year option for,
oh
what
my
was it,
God.
$13 million?
Dude, I don't, like, it was such, like, you could tell.
Yeah.
He had the sack year. He led the NFL in sacks, and then he had that awful
year after.
You had
a body of work, like you're saying. He had
Yeah, the year after, you could see who he was.
Oh, my God.
Vic Beasley is not about playing football. It's those kind of decisions and no space and bad draft picks. And that's the NFL. It can turn quick, and it turns around just as quick. The NFL is built for you not to stay in the hole long. What was Cincinnati 2 years before they went to the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
And then they're in the Super Bowl last year and had a chance to win it. That's the good news for NFL fans. When we come back, we got a couple of things to get to. The LIV Golf crew, they land another whale. They're not messing with the PGA. They're just taking them one at a time. Also, Steve Weiss, who's running around here from the NFL Network, when he tells us that may have been one of the best Hard Knocks episodes in the history of the show, wait till you hear the cut we have for you if you didn't see the show last night. And Mike Vick coming up about 20 minutes as well. Steak and Sander, we're live at Falcons training camp. It's the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
What's everyone talking about?
Yo, yo, what's the deal?
Sandra's got it covered as we belly up
on the Steakhouse
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, don't forget, you guys, Michael Vick coming up live in about 20 minutes, 10:40-ish or so. Also, I want to mention, we just talked about the Mets and Braves next week's stake. So the Braves, last night during the broadcast, decided they're doing a flash sale, like literally 40% off tickets, y'all. So if you want to sell out, yeah, the four games. So here we go. I just tweeted the link out, and it ends tonight at midnight. So just a heads up, if you want to head down, the battery's going to be pretty sick. I think I'm going to definitely go. For sure.
What night do you think you're going to go?
I'm not sure. Maybe Tuesday.
Maybe you go Tuesday, I go Wednesday.
And we can't go together? I mean, what, I'm going to sit by myself?
I like your husband, though. He's a good dude.
He's a good dude.
I hang with him.
Hard Knocks began last night. So Steve Weiss was here, a good friend of ours. I used to work with him. Now he's on the NFL Network. Boy, what a star he is.
Yeah.
He is so smooth.
I mean, look at his career just took off. And look at you. You're sitting here with a guy named Steak for like two decades. Listen, we all
like
can't
to call it sliding doors.
Yeah, we all can't get to that level. So
he's awesome. But anyway, he said that Hard Knocks episode last night was one of the best I've ever seen.
So I was watching the Braves. So
yeah, I'm going to watch it tonight.
No flipping last night for that game at Fenway Park, you know, because that was just too good baseball. But I'm going to watch it tonight.
He said he thought it had gotten a little stale. And I was like, interesting.
Who was last year? Talk about
how about
stale.
We don't even remember. So there you go. We'll have to look it up. Anywho, this is how they began the night. And let me set it up. Aiden Hutchinson, remember that stud out of Michigan?
Yeah,
he was the number two overall pick.
Yeah, so Heisman finalist.
he's just massive and he's hilarious. So they were doing the hazing where the kids get up and sing. So he decided to go with Billie Jean. The video is better, but which I'll tweet out so you can see it, but I just wanted you to hear it.
She was more like a beauty queen in a movie scene. I said, don't mind what you do to me. I am the one. Hey, 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 hey. On the floor, in the round. She told me her name was Billie Jean. Across the scene, yeah. Every head turned and eyes dream. Being the one.
He was good. They loved him.
Good to see your top pick being self-effacing,
yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly. Okay, I'm going to try to set this up, and y'all, if you've been on Twitter at all, the Little League World Series.
By the way, sorry.
Yeah.
It was the Cowboys last year, I believe.
How did I not remember that?
Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys. Remember it was the story about Dak Prescott coming back after injury?
Yes,
but,
yeah.
But other than that, it was a boring season.
Yeah,
so I apologize.
Don't remember. No, I'm glad, I'm glad you looked it up.
Year.
Okay, Little League World Series, it was one of the regionals, and it was a team from Texas and a team from Oklahoma. So Isaiah plays for the Oklahoma team. He's at the plate, okay? The pitcher's name is Caden. He is pitching. Well, he throws and he hits this kid
right
in the head.
Right in the head.
In the helmet. So
scary
he
looking.
Falls to the ground, but he gets up and he's like, okay, I'm good. Everybody checks everybody out. And this kid runs to first base.
Stays in the game.
He's good to go. However, this sweet kid Caden, who's the pitcher, is crying on the mound.
Can't get it together.
He's so upset.
He's traumatized at how badly that looked as the ball got away from. I mean, it looks, when you see the video, really badly. And it was great that the kid stayed in the game, so obviously he was fine.
So he gets to first base, and he kind of sees the pitcher, what's going on. And he, all by himself, just takes off toward the mound and hugs the guy.
Oh,
and he goes,
God,
it's going to be okay. He said, I'm fine. It's going to be okay. And trying to, and then the coach comes out, and they're trying to get this pitcher to get his, you know, act together.
It was, for any guy watching that or woman, it was tears are coming. I mean, I choked up in 2 seconds watching that kid hug the other kid who just hit him and trying to tell him, like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all right.
So you say everybody should have been sympathetic. And,
well, everybody and was.
Yeah.
Everybody,
well, not everybody.
Oh, he's sympathetic. They thought it was a beautiful moment.
Your Barstool boy, Dave Portnoy, decided to tweet out, and I quote, this is not good sportsmanship. It's dumb. You got this kid on the ropes, and he's rattled. Trip to Williamsport on the line. You can play patty cakes after. As far as the pitcher goes, that's your plate.
That's your plate. Oh, God.
So it's the opposite of crying is what
Dave Portnoy did, like a wrestling move and went all heel.
All heel, right? There you go. Exactly right.
So you didn't appreciate that.
I just thought, I mean, I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get me riled up, and it worked. I was like, you? So he's trending, and he's so excited about it. So and by the way, this kid was on Good Morning America. The kid,
of course he was.
Yeah, so.
We love Dave Portnoy. Don't talk about Portnoy. You know where he's from?
Guess.
You know where
Let me guess.
Stop it. He's got his heart in the right place, Dave Portnoy and Barstool. They know exactly what they're doing over there.
Live has gotten themselves the mullet.
Oh,
their latest signee, Cam Smith, who won the Open. I'm not supposed to call it the British Open.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I'm not supposed to call it that. I've been corrected. $100 million plus is his deal.
I mean, the Saudi money is just stupid. Man, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He said, it's like when Charles Barkley goes, or Shaq, and they decide I'm going to tip a waitress $500 or $1,000 because they can.
Right.
That's the equivalent of the way they give out. Like, we can give $10 million, so we will. What's the number?
$100 million.
Sorry.
100 plus, they said. Yeah. How do you say no?
There's
to
never
that?
Been anything like this. Like, they're like, their level of wealth,
yeah,
and their ability to take over and build this thing, not in 5 years, not in 10 years, immediately
from the jump.
Saudi money, oil money is crazy. I have a buddy that just went to work. He was running the Atlanta airport. Now he's working over there, working for Saudis or something. And he's just like, they're throwing money at you. That's a different level.
Right.
Because he said he turned it down, and then they came back and they said, oh, we'll double it. And,
oh, my gosh.
But that's the way they operate.
Yeah.
Money is
can.
No object.
You're right. You're
so
right.
To sit there and to somehow suggest that some guy can travel on the tour for 15 years and build his legacy, or you can set your family up generational wealth. So that's your kids, that's your grandkids, that's your great-grandkids. I mean, that's what we're talking. When you get into hundreds of millions, you have the right, you know, planner, right office working with your money. What are you going to tell these people?
Exactly.
No, go grind it out.
Yeah.
You know, easy.
Try to win a tournament. Exactly.
Right. I mean, so, the FedEx Cup pays, what, like $10 million or something?
Yeah.
You know, this is $100 million to do nothing.
Right. Just to show up.
Right. Just to show up, have fun.
Yeah.
Play for 3 days.
So, just they won't officially announce this, by the way, with this deal with Cam until after the FedEx playoffs. They want him to play. And, by the way, Cam Smith is the 2 seed overall in the 125-man field. And it's kind of important this morning to bring that up because a federal judge has said, not so fast, my friend. They denied that temporary restraining order to the 3 LIV golfers that were saying, like, we should be allowed to play in the FedEx Cup. And the judge was like, you're able to go and you signed up for it. You're able to make the money. You're not going to play in the PGA. That's the rule.
It's a very small win.
Right.
The PGA is under attack and LIV is winning. So that's a small win to be able to keep those guys out.
Right. Okay, that was – and just a reminder, Red Hot Chili Peppers are tonight. Traffic will be bad around Truist because I do think that so many people are going to go see Red Hot Chili. Is your kids going?
No, my kids want to go to the weekend tomorrow night.
Yeah,
that's
good.
A big deal. And that's at Mercedes-Benz.
Correct the mundo.
10:30 the time on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike Vick covered every game of Mike Vick's career. Was here day one when they traded up to get him. And I know you and I have just been incredibly impressed at how good this guy has gotten on the radio and on television and everywhere else.
I believe in a good turnaround and forgiveness, and you know,
he's been phenomenal.
He's been a phenomenal turnaround story.
Yeah. And he will join us live on set, number 7, Mike Vick with Steak and Sandra on the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game coming up. Ten 38, and this is the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What a fabulous time it's been being out here over the last week, and what a way to start our show, and that we get 4 straight days at Flowery Branch with the Falcons in these plush studios. And I know it sounds cliched, but you know, I'm an old-time radio guy.
Yeah.
When I was 7 years old, you know, when I heard people talking sports on the radio, and I was like, hold on a second. People get paid to do that?
Right.
That's what I need to do. And never being on a station like this, we're driving up here, and this 100,000-watt monster signal, and I talk about driving, whether you're going north or you're going to the lake or wherever, to hear such a, you know, signal, which is why the Falcons love being on 92.9, because you're on, like, the biggest signal in the market. For us to be here in this these amazing surroundings, and just all week long, I mean, you know, Andy and Randy get the players right when they get off the field. You heard Kyle Pitts. You heard Marcus Mariota. Then Mike and Carl do a great job grabbing these guys as they're coming off.
Yep.
So if you listen in the afternoon, you're getting more interviews. And then we're getting lucky enough to get Mike Vick coming up in about 3-4 minutes, who's just finishing up a TV interview and is going to be over here. But it's a great setup, and it's great to be attached to the National Football League. Haven't done that for years and been lucky enough to be at a station where we were the flagship for years. We were there together.
Mm-hmm.
And then NBA coming up and Atlanta United. You notice Mike Conti, who is does a great job programming this station, but he's walking a little more upright this week after that call he had on Saturday.
Can you just go national?
I think it's not confirmed, but if you call Mike Conti now, I think his call is his ring.
That would be a good idea. We should all make it our ring.
If you can't confirm or deny it. I think it's denied. He's
saying
denied.
That is great.
He's very humble.
Yes.
I was like, bro, that's a signature call.
That was
a signature call.
On the money. I agree.
So if you know me, I'm kind of modest. You know,
that's
you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is that? How people describe me? Understated, modest.
I've heard other adjectives. weren't 2 of them, but I'm sure.
I would have had that thing. I would have just been handing out like little mini discs. They still do that. Hey, nice to meet you, Steak Shapiro. Listen to this call.
Listen to me.
Listen to my call.
That's
phenomenal.
Hilarious.
It's like Mike Bell taught me. More of me.
More of me.
More of me.
But speaking of, the energy out here today is pretty cool. And NFL Network, they were here about 6 a.m. setting up, so they're doing practice. They're doing live hits. So
Listen, I remember when we were the epicenter of the National Football League, right? Because you had Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and Roddy White and an NFC Championship team or a team that, you know, listen, covering the Falcons, you know, we should have gone to the Super Bowl in that 49er game. We blow the lead and we can't stop their tight end in the second. We can't stop the running game in the second half. Then we do go to the Super Bowl a few years later. But when you talk about, like, the epicenter of the NFL Network was always rolling through Atlanta.
Yeah.
High-profile franchise with all those guys on offense and recognizable coaches and Mike Smith and Dan Quinn and And listen, we're not exactly in that same category anymore, right? So to say
the least.
Yeah, to see NFL Network set up here reminds us that every game, every team matters in the National Football League.
Exactly, right.
So really cool to be out here. Mike Vick walking up, getting ready to chat with him, a guy that both of us got to cover virtually his entire career. So we'll spend some time there and then wrap things up and wait for Andy and Randy to put the midday show up. And I'm sure they'll have another Falcon coming up as well. So
And I told you this a long time, way before Michael Vick's about to sit down and talk to us. Hey, Michael, of how good Michael Vick is on TV. And when we were covering, and Michael didn't, I don't think he loved the media. I'm going to ask him because you were so good on this new show, the NFL Kickoff, Mike.
Thank you so much.
You're really, really the craft.
We covered your very first interview ever in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's right.
Your very first press conference.
I did not like doing interviews.
No. But I would say it's amazing to think that years later you would be a TV personality or whatever you want to call you, journalist.
Journalist.
Journalist. That's what I tell my wife, and she's like, you ain't no journalist.
Journalist.
I said, you're an analyst. So I'm like,
analyst,
baby,
okay.
This is hard work, and it's What do you
attribute for a lot of folks? And I've watched guys that commit to it and just say, I'm going to get good at this. How did you do that? What was the focus?
Well, I think it was the people that I work with for sure. You know, Carissa, she, especially in the beginning, she always used to, you know, help me out in certain ways. And Tony used to come to me and to give me little tips.
Pointer, sure.
You know, and I seen them always taking notes and always working on their craft. And then what really did it for me was, you know, Michael Irvin. I seen him in the hotel one day, and he was working with NFL Network, and he was walking down the hallway, and he was reciting, he was talking to himself. And I'm like, what is he talking about? Like what's wrong with Mike?
Yeah, yeah.
Something's acting weird. But he was reciting his lines.
Yeah.
Or not reciting, but how he wanted to say.
Kind of rehearsing.
Yeah, rehearsing. And
thinking about what I want to go with.
Yeah,
what I want to go with.
Thinking about what he wanted to go with, what sounds best. And, you know, I took a lot away from when I heard Colin Cowherd on one of his shows. Colin, the guy who I love dearly. I heard him say on one of his shows that, you know, we don't just wing it. I don't get on the show. And I think Colin is amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
Even
preparing.
Colin is preparing and putting in the time and effort to make sure his show flows fluently. And now I said to myself, I got to do the same thing.
That's great.
The minute I changed the mindset and stopped looking at it like work and start having fun and enjoying Sundays
being entertaining.
And being with the guys, it was like, this is something that I really like doing. And, you know, it grew on me over the years. And at first I was used to, you know, I was always used to having a microphone in my face and, you know, being asked questions by the media. Now it is reversing. I'm entertaining the audience.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
full circle.
It was a difference.
Mike Vick is with us live here at training camp in Flowery Branch. So I am going to look back at the career a little bit in Atlanta and before that, because I've been on the radio from the day that we heard. I was on the air. I tell the story all the time. Our update guy busts in the room and says, bro, we just traded for the number one pick. Dan Reeves just got the number one pick. We're going to get Michael Vick. Because you, a lot like Zion Williamson and LeBron and other guys, there was no debate. Mike Vick is the number one pick. So it was only about who gets number one gets Mike Vick.
Right.
It all starts really that freshman season at Virginia Tech. And I'm curious, how much hype? There was a lot of hype as a recruit. But once you play in that Sugar Bowl against Florida State and have that freshman year that you had, did your life in terms of fame completely change from that moment? Or were you,
Yes. And leading up to that, prior to it, it was starting to change drastically. And more people asking for my autograph. I didn't even know how to do an autograph. I was just scribbling things on paper. And they wanted to, you know, take pictures Polaroids. And
did you give autographs in high school in Newport News?
No. No, I was not the guy in high school.
Okay. So then you get
to
Blacksburg. You're a redshirt freshman. Are you a big deal then?
I'm not a big deal then. I was very humble when I got to college and seeing how sophisticated and complex the offense was. And my high school career, I didn't learn a lot of football, so it was imperative that I set my first year because I wasn't ready to play. If they would have put me out there, it would have been a disaster. I think my first 3 weeks of practice, I probably had maybe 30 interceptions. because I was just dropping back and not even – I wasn't reading defenses. Right. I wasn't playing with an understanding.
But they always knew you were going to redshirt.
They always knew. Okay. Yeah, my high school coach, he mandated that I redshirt.
First year don't play.
Because he knew I needed to be strengthened as a – not only as a, you know, a college student, but as a college football player,
right,
which entailed a lot.
So then take us through when which game freshman year really starts to get it going. And then obviously I want to know from a fame perspective, which you basically had your entire life since then, is it right after the Sugar Bowl performance? So take us through a little bit how your life changed that year.
Yeah, well, after the Sugar Bowl, it was, you know, everything started to happen really, really fast. And I had a friend who was playing for the Baltimore Ravens, Cornell Brown, who came to me and told me that the Baltimore Ravens said they would take me in the top five in that the next year's draft. And I still had another college season to go. But it was so motivating because, you know, I watched the NFL, and it was a dream of mine to play in the NFL since I was a six-year-old kid. And it was right there in front of me, but I still knew I had work to do.
Right.
And I just started to grasp our offense. You know, I led the nation in passing efficiency. I wanted to build on that. I wanted to become a better passer. I knew I needed to have better fundamentals. And, you know, I was a Heisman Trophy candidate, which added pressure,
sure,
to the season unnecessarily.
Yeah. So is life totally different then on campus?
Life on campus is different. I'm eating free everywhere. They taking good care of me. Not, you know, from a financial standpoint, but, you know,
whatever you needed,
for the hard
sure
work I put in,
yeah,
you know, I'm really like seeing the benefits. I went to Syracuse and seen, when I was hosted by Donovan McNabb at Syracuse, I just seen how the fans just really appreciated Donovan.
Yeah.
And we went to a basketball game, we signed autographs, and I wanted to be that guy. And then all of a sudden, I was that guy where I was.
It all kind of changed.
The notoriety on campus was amazing.
All right, we only got a few minutes, so I want to fire a lot of things at you. By the way, you're down 28-7 in that game against Florida State. Chris Wanky, Peter Wark. What was you – because you guys come back and take the lead in that game, right?
Came back and took the lead 29-28.
Yeah.
Yeah, but lost it.
But that was a hell of a run, huh?
It was a hell of a run.
All right, so and you do mention recently that you would have stayed at Virginia Tech with the current NIL rules. That would have been a great situation. You wanted to stay.
I wanted to stay. I did not want to go to the NFL. I did not want to enter the draft. I felt like I needed one more season under my belt. I just got acclimated. I had a ton of teammates that I cared about dearly. I really appreciated Coach Beamer and my coaches, and I wanted to graduate.
And you like being on campus. I wanted to graduate.
I like being on campus.
Yeah.
And things were starting to fall in place.
And you would have been a $1 million guy probably in NIL, right?
Yeah, and you know, I just,
definitely.
That might have been a detriment.
Yeah, we'll
definitely.
That might have been a detriment.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it's hard to – that's weird. Now you had nothing. You know, now you got $1 million. You're living in Blacksburg, right?
I mean, I think I needed to stay motivated. I needed to stay hungry at night. I needed to continue to dream.
Right.
Like, all the while I'm playing college football, I'm still dreaming. I had no money, and I was so appreciative of the little things I had at the time. But I also knew that it was a different life ahead of me if I stayed focused and stayed in the moment and didn't get too far ahead of myself. If I could just, you know, not get complacent, continue to compartmentalize everything, and have an amazing 2000 season, then everything would
fall
come
into
full
place.
Surface. And then I spoke to a general manager who said, if you wait until your junior year, you'll be the first pick of the Houston Texans. And so it was all these things coming at me. And then I, you know, it was time to enter the draft, whether I was going to go or not. And then I went back home to Virginia, and I went back in my mom's house, and, you know, it was still the same thing. It was
right.
Still, you know, we were still in poverty, and it was like, you got
to
change.
You had to do
and
it.
It was
you
like,
go.
This
yeah.
is it. I
yeah.
got to go.
Yeah.
Right.
And I felt like I was forced to do it, but thank God I did. I ended up in Atlanta.
Mike Vick is with us live here on the Steakhouse. I want to go through, having covered your entire career, a couple of Atlanta moments. Just rapid fire, stream of consciousness. The Steeler game ends in a tie. Kind of your come out game in a lot
yeah.
of ways. What do you remember about that night?
It was a tough day. I remember they had
they're a beast.
They had a, yeah, they had a guy named, what was it, Kendrick Bell? What was this, the defensive end for the Pittsburgh Steelers? Bell?
Kendrell.
Kendrell
Bell.
Bell.
Kendrell
yeah.
Bell, Joy Porter. It was just a bunch of
Lord.
All-stars. And, you know, we started the game, and they was hitting me, and I was, you know, I felt like I was having a lot of success up into that game. And in the fourth quarter, I just snapped out of it, and you know, I seen
we
was down, and we just started doing all the right things, and we got focused. That was the cool part about that team is that we was able to focus when our backs was against the wall, and that's what I took away from that season. So that game right there, I grew up a lot. And
yeah, I thought it was
ended at a tie. It felt like a win.
I thought it was a seminal game for you in that season. Obviously, winning in Green Bay. Do you remember much about the Brett Favre, Michael Vick hype going into that game, and they'd never lost a playoff game?
Yeah, I just remember they was talking about it was going to be super cold and unbearable temperatures, and we get out there and it was like 24 degrees. And I'm like, this ain't too bad.
That's mild, right?
You know, this is good playing weather. And so from there, I felt we had the confidence, you know.
And you get the special teams touchdown.
Yeah, and then we got the elements. We got a special teams touchdown. We beat them 27-7. And
yeah,
it was a smooth. We came out and scored on the first possession, and that set the tone.
Sean Jefferson
hit him right in the mouth.
Yep,
hit him right in the mouth.
Great throw down the sideline, right?
The slant. Yep, down the sideline.
He's a veteran to have. Great veteran to have, right?
Oh man, Sean was amazing to have Sean and Warwick in the same locker room. It was like, you know, having a dad and an uncle, you know, in the locker room.
Mike Vick is with us on the Steakhouse. The most famous play of your career, probably the Vikings overtime touchdown. Do you remember just back in the day, if you saw a seam, you were going to take it? Or what do you remember about that Minnesota play?
Yeah, it was more about a pregame read. It was, you know, Coach Reeves always told me, you know, when they play man-to-man coverage, if they're not spying, then it's nobody on you. And if they have good coverage, then why not take off and run if their backs are to you?
Yeah.
And it wasn't about just taking off running. It was just great coaching.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't drop back, look down the field, and take off and run. It was they plan you a man-to-man coverage with no spy. If they do that continuously while everybody's running down the field,
right.
He's like, I'm going to send everybody on goals, and if nobody guards you,
they told you that,
run behind them.
So you
– It was coaching.
You were not
– instruction.
Wow. That's big props.
I was not supposed to run. It was, you know, I write some 585. We had comebacks, you know, and protection. And this is a good interview. Don't cut us off. Baby.
Okay, we got to keep going. That's his call.
No, I'm just playing.
Thanks, Mike.
And then we got 545, 555, 54, 585 or something like that. And now I come off the coverage and they playing man. I come off the play fake and the coverage is man. I pre-snap the coverage and I'm like, you know what, it's overtime, and I'm super tired of playing against this team. I'm tired of seeing purple for the day. And
best feeling in the
they
world?
They turn their backs, I'm running.
Yeah.
I'm booking. And came off the fake. And
you know they hit each other,
and,
too.
And you know Sean and Brian Finner, and they wasn't the fastest guys. So when I come out there, my fake – come out of the fake, they still like 10 yards into their route. They got another 9 yards to go. I'm like, you know what, keep running. And I ran behind them, and it worked out. So sometimes speed kills, but sometimes it works out for the best.
Mike Vick with us live here on the Steakhouse. What about when you come back, the Carolina Panther play in the Dome Saturday night? You do the Superman dive. Take us through. Is that another one of those signature moments?
Yeah, I sacrificed on that play, and I got awarded a contract the very next day.
Tell us about that.
It was just one of those nights and a game that we needed to win, and everybody needed to be hyper-focused.
You had been out for a bunch of games?
I've been out for 10 games. Oh, you know what? That was the year prior.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, I was coming off
about
injury.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole dome was packed.
And they did
Mike Vick's return, right?
Return and ceremony before the game, and that was amazing. That was my connection to the fans. That day was the day that I connected with the Atlanta Falcons fans because, you know, my – welcome back reception was almost bigger than the game, and I've been out for we beat Carolina that day.
You went airborne from like
the end zone, and Coach Reeves once again stepped in, and Coach Reeves called some amazing plays that day, and we picked up where we left off from the beginning of the season and the season prior.
Is there one Falcon play in your career that you remember more than any other? One moment.
It's probably
a lot of them.
It's probably the game against Green Bay.
The throw to Sean?
No, when I Stephon Baji, beat him early. I can't even say his name, but he had me on the sideline, and I like
threw him
into the and he
I
was like the
that.
Most fierce defensive end in the league, and I kind of like sunned him and took off, and then I broke up the middle, and I had one guy to beat, and I gave him a move, and I beat him. and he hit my leg, and they got me on it. But that would have been like my most amazing highlight of my life if I would have broke that tackle.
That's awesome. Hey, I know the Falcon fans mean a lot to you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, they call me. You know, when they call me, I come. They call me, I come. In every circumstance, and definitely want to get back to a game or two during the season, and can't wait to watch Marcus, take the team, you know, by the reins and do everything that's needed, you know, for this team to be successful. So it's exciting, you know, it's exciting to see, you know, where this team stands and how they hold up in the NFC South.
Well, thanks for reminiscing. It's great to see you again.
Thank you.
It's great to watch your career as well. Michael Vick here live. And we're done for the day on the Steakhouse. Thanks to the Falcons. Thanks, everybody here, Eric and Oren. And coming up, it's Andy and Randy on Sports Radio 929.